Okay, so we're at day 10, polar curves. Now, the interpretation of a polar curve is very simple. It's just a special parametric curve. Now, for reasons of tradition, we like to use these Greek letters for angles, but I mean, just imagine that's a T instead of a theta. And so, if somebody gives you a polar equation, R is such and such a function of theta, we have a simple translation into a Cartesian parametric curve, the being just the standard translation from polar to Cartesian, right? This is what I would take as the definition of sine and cosine functions, right? And if you're given the R and the theta, the interpretation. So if you have a relationship between R and theta, a functional relationship, input theta, output R, can turn it into input theta, output x and y. So one input, two outputs, can graph it as a parametric curve. Now, of course, the picture you want in your mind is the standard picture people draw of the circle. We have a circle centered at the origin. It has a radius of r. For this, this equation makes sense if r is negative, but the pictures are confusing, so I'm drawing a picture for positive r here. And if you go off to the right here, you get to Cartesian coordinates r, 0. Then if you proceed arc length r theta in a counterclockwise direction along that circle, and if theta was negative, you would be going clockwise, right? That's how you would interpret a negative theta. But for simplicity, this is a picture with positive r, positive theta. So by definition, if you have a circle centered at the origin, radius r, you start at the right edge of the circle, and you go distance r theta counterclockwise, your x position after that motion is going to be given by these formulas. Translating backwards from Cartesian to polar is not as simple because of the fact that there are multiple representations of a given point on the plane in polar coordinates. If you use Cartesian coordinates, then there's exactly one pair, x, y, that corresponds to this point. But in terms of r and theta, there are infinitely many r and theta pairs that correspond to this point. See, so the one thing you can do is the following. What happens if you replace r with negative r? Well, that would reflect you around the origin to over here.
Yes.
And what would that the angle that would correspond to an angle of theta minus pi. Or equivalently, theta plus pi. Right? If If you were to go 180 degrees, so pi radians, or if you think of it in terms of a semicircle, pi r, arc length, over to here, right? So that's one kind of symmetry. You have r cosine theta equals negative r times cosine of theta plus pi, and doing the same thing for the y coordinates. So if you add 180 degrees to your angle, which would give you the same result actually as subtracting 180 degrees, that gets to the next symmetry. That's equivalent to changing the sign of the radial coordinate. And so if you do both those things, they actually undo each other. So you can also use this. If somebody, for some reason, wanted to give you a negative radial coordinate, you know, if r was negative 5, you could use this to make it negative negative 5, flip it to a positive radial coordinate at the price of changing your angular coordinate. So that's this one kind of symmetry. So there's two ways to represent a point. Because you could add 180 degrees to the angle, and then you could take the opposite of the radial coordinate to bring you back to the same place you started. The other symmetry is just the fact that if you go around a whole circumference of the circle, you're back where you started. So if I go r theta, but then I go another 2 pi r, I'm back where I started. Likewise, if I go around yet another 2 pi r, so I've gone around 4 pi r. Or I could do negative angular displacement, where I go clockwise. Any multiple of 2 pi r circumference. And so any multiple of 2 pi change in the angular coordinate leaves things unchanged. So this already gave us two representations of a single point, and this symmetry gives us infinitely many. Because you can use any integer, positive or negative or zero. So you have these multiple ways to represent the same point. So you can't quite go backwards in a clean way, because it's not obvious which representation should you pick. So it's not unique. I can give examples of how you could do it. We know, for example, we have the Pythagorean theorem, right? So if I can make a little right triangle here. This leg has magnitude y length. This leg has magnitude x length. So x squared, which is the same as the absolute value of x squared, plus the y squared is equal to r squared. So one choice is to choose positive r, right? Unless you're at the origin, right? So people usually choose this one. And this equation would actually work at the origin, too. It would just come out 0 and be fine. But, I mean, the negative radius would be a legitimate choice. But people usually choose this one. And then here, you could, for example, this is usually the the common first choice. And then for theta, you could do a number of things. So, for example, you could look at this and you could try to invert the cosine function, but it's not a one-to-one function, so you have to make some kind of choice somewhere. So, for example, if you invert the arc cosine function, you get stuff from 0 to pi. And so that, which is okay if you're on the top half of the circle. So you could just do x over r. And for r, use this. And then you'll be okay. The way the arc cosine function is defined, it always spits out an angle from 0 to pi, but that's only good on the top half of the circle. Well, what about the arc sine? Okay. So solve this equation for theta. Well, how does... And the arc sine function, the way it's defined is it always spits out an angle between negative 90 degrees, so clockwise 90 degrees from the right endpoint. That's the minimum value. The maximum value is positive 90 degrees, positive pi over 2 radians. So you only get the right half of the circle. And again, for the r here, you just want to plug in this. Well, you could be slightly more clever. You could say, hey, let's divide the equations. Y divided by x will be r sine theta divided by r cosine theta. So the r's will cancel, and I'll just have sine over cosine. That's tangent. Okay. How about that? Arctangent, then, of y divided by x. Will that work? Let's see. How does arctangent work? Well, it always spits out something strictly between negative 90 degrees and positive 90 degrees. So if you're strictly on the right half of the circle, that'll be okay. We got partial coverage here. We've got something that works for the top half. We've got some things that work for the right half. But we've left out the bottom left quadrant there. There's going to be some issues there. You can do the symmetry. So, for example, what if you wanted to deal with the bottom half using arc cosine function? So you imagine your angle theta. What if you were down here in the bottom half? Okay. So okay. Well, the x is determined by the cosine of theta. Okay. Now, if you would just go clockwise instead of counterclockwise, so if you go negative theta, that would get you the correct cosine value.
But would the x be negative as well?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If I have x positive and y positive, I flip it down here, then the x hasn't changed. I'm just flipping the sign of the y. I don't care what the sign of the x is. This first choice here, arc cosine, works for any x. Okay. It breaks down when y is negative. But if you would just go the other way, then you would, so if you go clockwise, you would flip the sign of theta and get the right point. So for the bottom half of the circle, you could do that. There is a, if you look in the back of your calculus book, there's a reference section on these on trig functions and inverse trig functions. You can make a different picture for each of these symmetries. I could label this symmetry A, and that corresponds to this. And so this idea here is using symmetry B there. Or if you go clockwise, you end up over there. What else could you do?
Arc sine.
Could do something with arc sines. Let's see. All right. So the arc sine thing only works if you have a non-negative x, so you have to be on the right half. So I already drew this picture of a negative x, so let me draw a picture of a positive x. For example, what happens if I flip it over to here?
The x becomes negative.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what does that correspond to, and how do we change the angle? If we have some angle, a negative angle theta. There, right? So with this arc length r theta, well, negative r theta, it's clockwise. And this would just take us around one. Go like this. This is pi r, and then do that again. Okay. Do that. And I could do another picture, the same idea, but this time I'll make the theta positive. This time we go pi r around, and then we back up, go negative r theta, get there. So in each case, whether theta is positive or negative, to correct for the this issue here of this only working when x is on the right half, you take this mirror image, you can call this symmetry C in both its forms. And you just do pi and then the opposite of the solution that worked there. Last thing you can try, arctangent. Arctangent is only correct on the right half. Well, if you're on the left half, what are you going to do? Well, notice that y divided by x is the same as negative y divided by negative x. So the this thing will not change if you just flip the sign of both. Okay? And that corresponds to adding 180 degrees. So using the symmetry A there, you can get the last one. So as you can see, there's lots of choices, and you could add multiples of 2 pi to these choices, right, to get even more possibilities. And you could also flip the sine of r and add pi to your angle to get yet more choices. Picture in my head, and then I use the symmetries to rediscover them as I need them. So my arc cosine function, I just have to, these are the, what I really need to remember is which things are possible outputs. Right? Arc cosine takes inputs from -1 to 1, outputs angles from 0 to pi. Arc sine outputs angles from -π/2 to π/2. And that's not very helpful, really. What's really helpful is to have a picture of, oh, that would be the top half of the circle, right? Starting at the right edge and going pi r around, counterclockwise. This would be the right half of the circle. You can either go from the right endpoint, you can either go a quarter circle counterclockwise or a quarter circle clockwise. And then the arc tangent, well, it can take any input. Because remember, sine over cosine, sine could be close to 1 and cosine could be close to 0. Or sine could be close to -1 and cosine could be close to 0. So the fraction sine over cosine could be really big. So the tangent could be really big. So an inverse tangent function needs to be able to handle big inputs. And then here, again, the way the function is defined, it gives you the right half of the circle. Same as arc sine, except it can't handle the top or bottom. Because at the very top and bottom, the cosine is, or x, I think it's x coordinate divided by r, is 0. So you'd have division by 0 when you did sine over cosine. So I just think of that. Review of trigonometry, theory of the circle for you. Any questions or comments?
What do you mean by saying r theta?
I mean r times theta.
Okay, but the r is always, you're referring to the radius, right?
Yeah.
And the theta is the angle, or it's another value?
Theta is some number.
It could be like 1.5, 2.0.
Okay, but what if we call this S? That's a traditional symbol for arc length. Okay, call this length S.
Uh-huh.
Theta is the ratio of that arc length to your radius. That's how we define angles. So if you have a tape measure and you have a ruler and you have a disc, right, you can measure some arc lengths, you can measure some radii, you can divide them, and you can compute some angles without a protractor.
Wait, what did the S mean? Yes.
What?
The S.
Huh?
It says arc tangent equals
arc length.
S is the symbol for arc length. Like we've used DS for a little piece of arc length approximated by a line.
Mm-hmm.
So S would just be like the total arc length along the whole arc. Calculus of these things is going to be, in many cases it's a special case of parametric stuff, right? The differences arise when the symmetry gives you a shortcut. Okay. Okay. So, for example, what if you wanted to do a more complicated parametric curve? So, for example, r equals 1 over 1 plus cosine theta. This is actually a parabola. If you can prove that by translating things back into Cartesian stuff. You could do the stuff we've done before. So, for example, let's say you want to know the slope at some angle theta. Do the same trick that we did before. Okay. We just have to remember that y is r times sine theta. So. X is r times cosine theta. Or x is r times cosine theta. And we have a formula for r. So now you can take derivatives. You could have some complicated formula and to maybe simplify it some if you see some cancellations. I'll show you. It's not that bad, okay? It's the quotient rule. You get used to it.
Okay.
See, with the polar coordinates, there's this common r factor. Well, in this case, it's a quotient rule because of the reciprocal there. So what's going to happen? When you use the quotient rule, you end up with 1 over the denominator squared. But it's going to happen in both of them, so those are going to cancel. So all that's really going to matter is the numerator parts of the quotient rule. Sine theta derivative, numerator derivative times denominator minus numerator times denominator derivative, and the same thing we'll have there. Thank you. these things will cancel, the 1 plus cosine of theta squared. So it's just going to be cosine theta, 1 plus cosine theta minus sine theta, and the derivative of 1 plus cosine theta is minus. And then down here, we have minus sine theta times cosine theta. Okay, so just, there was four derivatives that I had to do there. Two of the derivatives were the same one again. Repeats in both derivatives. Now, if you want to get fancy, then you can simplify this further using some trig identities. 1 times cosine theta is cosine theta. Okay, so. And then cosine theta times itself is cosine squared. Minus sine theta times the opposite of sine theta. So that's going to. Minuses will cancel. So that's a sine squared. Hey, that's good. Cosine squared plus sine squared is 1. What happens down here? Negative sine theta. Minus cosine theta times sine theta. And then here, interesting. Minus cosine theta times the opposite of sine theta. So minus minus plus cosine theta times sine. These cancel. The two squares there add up to 1. So if you're really, if you really want to simplify it, it's possible. Now the reason you might want to simplify it is if I asked you to figure out concavity. Remember the last time we did concavity, you took the derivative of the slope with respect to x. So if you're in that situation, you would like it if you simplified your slope formula before you had to take its derivative. Trying to figure out arc length, say of a parabola like this one, or if we're trying to figure out when you revolve some curve around some axis, right? Then you end up with that other 2 pi RDS formula. So there the R means something different. So this is going to work just like it did for parametric curves. Okay. You just differentiate with respect to the parameter, except this time the symbol I use for the parameter is theta instead of t. So if I use this same r in terms of theta form again, for example, then my ds would be square root of two squared derivatives, right? So I would have to deal with this ugly thing. So I would take that derivative, which is this thing here, and square it. X1's on the bottom, right? Here? Yeah, there we go. It's just like for parametric. Although you might wonder if there's some way to make it easier. So turns out there is a shortcut. I have to take a picture of this first. There is a way to get a simpler formula for that arc length differential. There's a slight simplification you can do for the slope formula, but I don't think it's worth memorizing because it's not that much simpler, and it's not a trivial formula to memorize. So I don't bother to go into that. But you can see it in the book. But I don't think it's much of a shortcut. But for arc lengths and for area, not surface area, just like area inside a curve, there are two significant polar shortcuts. And it has to do with the symmetries inherent, you know, with the, it's all about the circle, right? This is all defined in terms of the circle and in terms of a right triangle. So you can prove this simplification purely algebraically if you want to. It looks like this. Use the product rule on this, and so you get. I use the product rule on each of these, and just to be clear, the squaring happens after take the differential. So if I just use the product rule in differential form there, so I took the derivative of r, but doing differential, so just dr. So one derivative of r is 1 dr. Derivative of cosine theta is negative sine theta, so that's the other part of the product rule, negative sine theta, but so I'm doing a differential, I multiply it by d theta. And you can do a little bit of algebra dance. You can expand the squares and, for both of these. And you get dr squared cosine squared theta from this one. You get a dr squared sine squared theta from that one. Then the other part is you get to cross terms, like this times this twice, so 2R dr. And then for the first one, you get negative cosine theta sine theta. So then you do the cross terms here. This times this twice. You have R dr positive cosine theta sine theta. And those cancel out. And then for the other part of the binomial expansion, when you expand the square, you get this term squared and this term squared. R squared d theta squared. And then you have sine squared for here, right? Negative sine quantity squared is sine squared. And then here, you get a cosine squared. And so this cosine squared plus sine squared is 1, so you get a 1. This cancels, you get a 0. Sine squared and cosine squared is another 1. So even if you have no geometric insight, if you had an algebraic stubbornness, you could discover this. And then take the square root, you get this. Now usually you're given r as a function of theta, so what you want to do is factor out a d theta. Just like I factored out a d theta over here. Do the same thing here. So you get a nice shortcut formula. I'm going to be extra clear here. This, the whole thing, the whole square root, the d theta is outside the square root.
Okay.
So if you know the derivative of r with respect to theta, it's easier. Now, why is this true? Draw a picture. Imagine here's r. There's your angle. I'm going to make it like this. Here's that arc length r theta. Now we're somewhere else on a curve. So maybe my curve does something like this. So what happened? So now I'm over here. Okay. So I have a little bit more radius, dr. So r plus dr. Okay. Now, if we extend, I should use black for that. That's not the curve, right? Now, extend your circle there, and you have what? How much more arc length do we have here? Well, if we have an angle, a change in angle d theta, right? That then this would be r times d theta. That's the arc length for circle segment formula. So if we have, so if the angle changes by d theta, the circle would have an r d theta more arc. All right, but our curve may not be along a circle, right? So there's two components here. There's the r d theta, and then there's the dr. And so what we do is we say, well, if dr and d theta are small, all right, then we have approximately a right triangle, right? I mean, there is actually an exact right angle there. That should be a right angle because a radius is always perpendicular to a radius is always perpendicular to the tangent of a circle, right? But of course, you know, this is a little curvy and this is a little curvy. But the smaller you make dr and d theta, this becomes closer and closer to straight. So you have this right triangle. So that's why you get ds squared is dr squared plus r squared d theta squared, because in the limit it becomes a perfect right triangle. So this I like better. I like this kind of geometric thinking better than tracing through all that algebra. But either way, you end up with a nice shortcut formula if your parametric curve is actually a polar curve. You can do something similar with area. I'm not gonna punish you with the algebra for the area one. So think about the, okay, so we have curve, same picture. Now I want to know the area in here. Okay, so this time the approximation looks even cruder. The idea is if d theta is really small and dr is also really small, then the change in dr compared to r should be really small. So what we do is we make an isosceles triangle approximation. We know that it's not quite right. We know that, you know, there could be a little bit more, like this, right? It could be a little bit off, but in the limit, as the dr gets really small compared to r, this becomes, a better and better approximation. You can make the error less than 1%. You can make the error less than, a tenth of a percent. You can make the error in percentage terms as small as you want. So pretend you have an isosceles triangle, okay? And we're actually going to be, and in fact, you can actually make another crude approximation where these become almost parallel, and you can actually get away with pretending the height is actually R itself. So you end up with, this really crude approximation. So you pretend it's an isosceles triangle with height R and the base. Well, this is roughly, this thing, it's about r d theta, right? If the dr is really small, it gets really close to a circle. That kind of approximation is not quite good enough for arc length. But when you're doing area, it's more forgiving, because as you can see, this, throwing away this little bit is only a small fraction of the area, whereas this ds can always be significantly longer than the r d theta in percentage terms. I mean, for example, if this is a 45-45-90 triangle, the ds would always be about 40% longer than each leg, no matter how short the legs were. But in terms of area, it's just a little bit left over. Okay. So you use a 1/2 base height formula. Times the base times the height. So now you could do something like this. Integrate this thing. Okay. So things are just like parametric curves, except I would say the exceptions are you can use this shortcut, make your life easier, and you can use this shortcut, make your life easier. Homework for the second batch. Okay. Express the area and circumference of the ellipse as integrals only involving theta. So I just mean no other variables. I mean, you can have constants in there, but there shouldn't be any other variables. And go ahead and use S. Simpson's rule, 20 subintervals to estimate those intervals. Thank you for your patience.